Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the SBC podcast, soon to be Experience Share podcast, in the middle of rebranding right now. With us today is Dr. Josh Luke, an award-winning health and wealth authority, author, CEO, speaker, among many other accomplishments. Right now, I think you are focusing on, among many things, I wanted us to focus on the pillars of trust. And then maybe if we have time, we can talk a little bit about identifying and preventing fraud and non-compliance. But with that, Dr. Josh Luke, welcome. And can you please tell us how you got into all of this and you started talking to people about trust and compliance?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. You can find me on LinkedIn at Dr. Josh Luke or over my shoulder here. I think you can see healthwealth.com is the name of my website if you're looking for more. Or at drjoshluke.com. But just to give you a quick background on my history, I was a hospital CEO for about 10 years. And a couple of those hospitals that I worked at, there were some things I saw where I wasn't completely comfortable with them. And I wasn't sure if they were things that were appropriate or legal. So, you know, I made the decision to report them. You know, of course, in the United States, we call that being a whistleblower. The official name is kind of a QTAM suit, lawsuits where the government can choose to join and kind of work with you to recover any stolen funds. And so I guess I'm what you would call a two-time whistleblower. I'm also a four-time author, three-time Amazon number one bestseller with a book series called Health Wealth, if you're interested. And they're really a combination of books that teach you how to access affordable healthcare in America. And also, I have a book called X Acute, a former hospital CEO tells all on what's wrong with American healthcare, which was one of my funnest books to write for sure. It was really short chapters. You can read most of them at a stoplight. They're so short, but very, very popular. I probably got more input on that book than any book I've ever written. X Acute, you know, cool name, former hospital CEO tells all. And because I did become a whistleblower and help the government successfully recover funds on two occasions, as a public speaker, a lot of the associations I speak for and corporations who hire me labeled me a futurist, a healthcare futurist, because when I left the hospital, I was talking about what's going to happen. They really didn't know that I was a whistleblower at the time. So now I'm kind of a futurist who also has the side note, he's a two-time whistleblower, which is why I often use the hashtag do the right thing. So,
yeah. Do the right thing. You can't go wrong with that. Do the right thing and sleep well, right?
That's right.
But very relevant topics, both from the fact that you have a healthcare background, which is, of course, front and center of what's going on right now in the pandemic we're going through. And then, you know, whistleblowing, a whole other story, because, I mean, it's not an easy thing for a lot of people to step up and to do the right thing against all of the powers, you know, that are usually going in, the currents that are going in one direction. And also futurist, did a lot of those things that you are telling people, maybe that did they come true during this pandemic?
Yeah, almost across the board, because I wasn't doing anything with the crystal ball. I was simply reading the Affordable Care Act, which a lot of people know as Obamacare, and saying, here's how we're going to transform. Here's how we're going to change. The reason I became so popular as a speaker between 2012 and 2016-17 was because not many health systems were making those changes. In fact, I used to joke they were crossing their fingers that in the 2016 election cycle, there would be a Republican majority president in Congress that could overthrow Obamacare. And they actually got their wish on the political side, but they three strikes and you're out is kind of what happened. The Trump administration majority was unable to undo the Affordable Care Act. And so all of a sudden, there was this mad rush to do these things that were in plain black and white in Obamacare. It wasn't like, some magic crystal ball. It was just, we're transitioning to an insurance model where the hospital is no longer the breadwinner in the model. Unfortunately, the insurer, who is already really the true breadwinner, is going to have even more power for the short term, I think. But the hospital becomes more of a cog in the spoke, more an expense in the process. When I was a hospital CEO, it was all about the bottom line, and it was a good bottom line. Things were going well. And so when I started to talk about the future of healthcare in 2012, 13, 14, and my books came out saying, here's what it's going to look like. It's going to focus on you. It's going to focus on keeping you at home. It's going to focus on health and technology, just like that book over my shoulder. It's all about health, wealth, focusing on you. Okay. And so people didn't do that for 4 or 5 years. Why would they? The hospitals are making big bucks. They're printing money. They're doing great. But when they realized that the Trump administration was unable to overthrow Obamacare, then they realized they better start moving quickly. And so all those things I said started coming true. It wasn't really rocket science. So yeah, pretty much all of them, which is why the futurist thing kind of stuck.
Yeah. It's amazing. So I know, like, obviously, like, one of the big issues, we've seen many examples of people not doing the right thing or companies not doing the right things. While you may get away with it for a while, it's bound to unravel. It's bound to come out, which brings the issue of trust. One, trust within, like, the organization, and trust, of course, garnering trust from the people that you serve. And I know you talk about that. Can you tell our audience a little bit, or teach, or preach, or however you want to approach it, about the pillars of trust?
Yeah, let me do that. And what Rashid is getting at is, I'm a public speaker. I would love for you to hire me. Reach out at drjoshluke.com. Not only do I do a keynote, but I'll also come to a breakout specific to a topic, whether it's whistleblowing or these four pillars of trust or selling to hospitals, whatever it is. I do a keynote. I do a complimentary breakout. And I also provide up to 250 free books for everybody who's attending to put in your swag bag. So this year's keynotes, there's a handful of them. I always am willing to talk about healthcare and the future of healthcare, but there's a new one, two new ones really, and Rashid's referring to one of them. The other one I'll just throw in there real quick. I won't talk about much, but the name's really cool. It's called Serendipity: Pandemic Learned Skills That Lead to Riches. And it's a really exciting new presentation I have, keynote I have, where I outline a handful of skills that we all learned during the pandemic that could actually make us richer financially, but more so richer in life. And so Serendipity: Pandemic Learned Skills That Lead to Riches is one of them. But the other one that Rashid referred to is really just being a whistleblower and having integrity and the four pillars of trust that come along with that. So let me identify what those four pillars of trust are for you real quick. To end the mystery, I don't think they're anything overwhelming, if you will, but they are things that I think are important, particularly if you want to be a whistleblower, help your company save millions. You can make anywhere from 10 to 25% of the award if the government takes your case and you win. So all of those things get back to being a whistleblower. And ultimately, I didn't do it for the money. You've heard that before, right? I did it to do the right thing. And guys, there's a time and a place where your name's associated with the inappropriate behavior. You notice I try not to use the word fraud any more than I have to, just because I still want to. I'm not here to go after the companies I worked for. I don't even mention them by name. It's just a matter of, I just like to use the term, it was uncomfortable for me. It could have potentially been considered fraud. So I went ahead and reported it. And in both cases, the government agreed with me and went after it and recaptured. So my other keynote is whistleblower: save millions by creating a culture that recognizes and prevents fraud and noncompliance. And the four pillars of trust that really help you with that. So the first thing, do the right thing. Just do the right thing. Your gut's going to tell you what the right thing is. Your education, your experience, your employees are often going to have that look on their face. I was the CEO of the hospital, so it took a lot of courage for an employee to say, "Hey, Josh, hey, Dr. Luke, are you sure?" Oftentimes, they just kind of have a look on their face because, you know, everybody wants to keep their job and nobody wants to say the wrong thing, even when their gut's telling them it's the wrong thing. So the first thing is just do the right thing. And your gut and your employees and facial expressions, if not words, are going to tell you all those things. Another thing is transparency. And in healthcare, transparency is rapidly becoming a common theme, price transparency in particular. But I just feel when you put all the cards on the table and you discuss it with the experts that work for you and report to you that you trust, transparency is always going to be a benefit and a value to you. And another thing I've always lived by, and I don't understand people who don't agree with this, the number three thing, after number one, do the right thing, number two, transparency, is when in doubt, just ask somebody. There's this thing that people feel like they have to know everything, and asking questions is not appropriate. I've never been a subscriber. So when in doubt, ask. Ask people that have the expertise and ask people that you can trust. And number four, the last thing, is pretty generic, but it's just have integrity in all that you do. You know the difference between right and wrong. When you put all these three things together, they just really come down to, it's just a job. It's not that important. I had colleagues in the healthcare space, hospital CEOs, that their offices were raided with the FBI, with guns pulled, people taken away in handcuffs. Guys, no job's worth that. And that's really why I came up with these four pillars of trust.
Yeah, as the adage goes, we often not need to be told, just need to be reminded. And we all need reminders every now and then. And I think a lot of the corporate world, I mean, some of these things, they take on a life of their own. And then before you know it, no one can step up. It becomes more and more difficult for people to step up and stop something from getting even worse. What kind of person does it take to be able to do that? Obviously, like, you know, you weren't even at a bigger role. So I'm pretty sure there is like a lot of probably uncomfortable, consequences and conversations and looks and you name it that you had to endure. And can you speak a little bit about what people can do to overcome that and to actually be able to do the right thing against all those powers?
Yeah, I think when you look at both of the situations I was in, there were other people before me that knew that there was something inappropriate going on, if not fraudulent and illegal, and just nobody had the courage to just do the right thing. And it really came down to that. And, you know, at the time I had kids in elementary school and middle school, and I realized no job is worth this. And so initially the precautions you start taking are more self-defense and to protect yourself, to say, hey, I was not involved in this. And then as you accumulate more data, there comes a time where you go, hey, I'm crystal clear on what's taking place here, and I don't want to be a part of it. And then the next step is, am I just going to leave the job and let it go, or am I going to report it? And I'll tell you, most people in my experience just leave the job, or they ignore it and hope it goes away. There are several cases in healthcare where different chief financial officers came into play, recognized what was going on, and didn't even leave. You know, they just said, oh, well, it was my predecessor, not me. Well, the government, with all due respect, doesn't always understand our business, particularly in healthcare. And I know you've seen that in other verticals. Mm-hmm. And so to assume that they're going to agree with you is an assumption that I don't want to make and I don't want to stake my freedom on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not an easy topic. But I am intrigued, though, with the... because I'm always for like extracting lessons anywhere we can. And so I'm intrigued about that serendipity and lessons. Of course, one, we don't have time to go into all of that. And also, I don't want you to give it all away because, I mean, we encourage people to go get the book kind of book you to go and talk about it. But can you give us one or two nuggets from there or a little bit of a preview?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because in third quarter and fourth quarter 2021, we're hoping the world opens back up, events start being hosted again, and I can get back to doing my primary profession, which is a public speaker and entertainer and educator, get you guys a copy of my book. But it's interesting because when you think about what are going to be hot topics for 2021 and 2022 when we're back to full-on events, The pandemic is, your first thought is, man, nobody wants to talk about that anymore. But also social justice is out there. And I have a podcast where I have a African-American colleague I grew up with where we talk about how to engage white people and Caucasians into the conversation. But all that said, it's because those are the two hot topics in 2019 that crawled into 2020. And so when I think of the pandemic, for years, I've talked about the advantages of understanding millennial culture. And now Gen Zs are entering the workforce, right? I'm a Gen Xer. I'm a proud Gen Xer, man. I love my Diet Coke, my chicken nuggets, all those MTV things that just evolved in the 1980s, right? My parents are boomers. It seems that the hip thing, and you're going to start seeing a lot of this about Gen Zers in 21 and 22 and 23 because they're entering the workforce. We're going to start making fun of them in news articles because of the things they do. Please don't do that. The younger generation always gets picked on because their reality is the reality. Can you remember that quote? Their reality is the reality. Millennial culture took over our world 8 or 10 years ago, and some of you still haven't accepted it, are still coming to terms with it, and just won't accept it because you're stubborn. Guess what? It's costing you. That's a you problem, nobody else. And so what my serendipity pandemic lessons learned that lead to riches presentation is about is really kind of saying, hey, my kids as Gen Zers and millennials that I teach at the university, they're learning these experiences of self-isolation, preventing anxiety, working from home, no travel for business. There's a really quick laundry list of some of the things you asked about. Okay. They're learning them early in life. Okay. They can apply them for their entire career, not just the back end of their career and their home life like us Gen Xers and boomers. So that's just a short laundry list of things. I think self-management, health, working out at home, the gazillions of dollars that as a young Gen Xer in my career, I was told it's necessary to fly to San Francisco or New York for a 1 hour meeting, even if it costs $1,500. Nuh-uh, not when that's your money. We're breaking down those walls. We're breaking down those barriers. And so I Googled for weeks that the word, how do you get a positive from a negative? What's a word? And finally it hit me, serendipity. Well, I love that movie. And sure enough, the definition was exactly what we're talking about, something that good that comes out of an unexpected or a bad situation. And so that's where I came up with that title. I'm really looking forward to sharing that message with you. And again, guys, if you're in an association or that has an annual meeting, or if you work for a company that brings in an annual speaker, go to drjoshluke.com, reach out to me. I'd love to hear from you.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Very relevant and very insightful there. So of course, we can't go down that rabbit hole right now because obviously we're almost out of time, but it's definitely super, super relevant and super fascinating. I know you've already shared some contact information, but of course, we will also publish all your links and things like that when we publish the podcast. But besides that, was there anything else that you wanted to share with our audience today before we conclude today's podcast?
Yeah, just really quickly, guys, you heard the website, drjoshluke.com, but you can also on LinkedIn, please send me a connection request or a follow request because I'm capped out. They don't let me reach out to you, but I can follow you back when I see that you followed me. So you prompting me helps me. And then if you're a tweeter, I'm on Twitter at Josh Luke, JOSHLUKE, the number 4 health. So Josh Luke 4 health. Rashid, thanks so much for having me. I love what you're doing. I'd love to participate in more of the compliance-focused events over the next couple of years and share my story and give you guys a copy of my books.
Thank you very much, Dr. Josh Luke, everybody. It's been a blast. And unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. So thanks, everybody, for stopping by. And listeners, this concludes today's episode. Be on the lookout for future ones on our blog, links at sbchecks.com. And of course, you can listen from any of your favorite podcast players as well. Be well and be kind.
Thanks so much.